I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
Connecting the dots of the Constitution for you like no one else can. The Chris Ann Hall Show. American woman, listen what I say. She's an attorney, a disabled U.S. Army veteran, an author, public speaker, mother, pastor's wife, and a patriot. She's Chris Ann Hall.
American woman. Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal, your daily dose of Constitution and principle, giving you the news the way it should be reported, not fake news, not political propaganda, but liberty over security, principle over party, and truth over your favorite personality. I am here with my husband and co-host, J.C. Hall, and we are continuing our Back to School Special Edition series, The Inoculation Against the Indoctrination, the Vaccination That Needs to Sweep the Nation. How's that? I've been working on it.
Good.
I've been practicing it. So
don't quit your day job.
Don't quit my day job. What is my day job is talking and making up speeches and words, just not rapping and rhyming, right? So this is part three. Part three of our back-to-school series, The Inoculation Against Indoctrination. And just as a review, I want the people to realize that the part one was the Daily Journal, the first Daily Journal. And we did that one on the
Supremacy Clause,
mm-hmm. right? And then part two was the weekend edition of the Chris Ann Hall Show, where we covered the creation of the states, and we covered how the states were formed, how the Constitution was formed, how the federal government was formed, and the essential principle that the states are the creators of the federal government and therefore are the ultimate check and balance on the federal government.
And have a duty to protect
the
individual rights of its citizens against an encroaching federal government.
Right. So just as a reminder, the full courses that we have been teaching here are available online at Liberty First University.
Yeah, these shows just scratch the surface.
They just scratch the surface. And you can get the DVDs at libertyfirstuniversity.com. Go to the store. You can become a student at Liberty First University as well and have full access to all the courses. And I think that every parent ought to do that for their child.
Absolutely.
And I'm not saying you get it and then you make your kid go through it. I think that as parents, we have a duty to know this information first.
Of course.
Right? Because we're supposed to be the say on the curriculum in the schools. Yeah. I don't know, when we were growing up, PTO, the parent-teacher organizations, the parents were actually involved in curriculum selection. Now they've been relegated to being fundraising, you know, functions for the schools.
Yeah, I met a gentleman in Reno, DJ, who started... He's an older man, mm-hmm. much older man, and he's now teaching a group in Sparks, I think, mm-hmm. in near Reno, and basically every Wednesday, I think, oh, it's like every week, mm-hmm. this guy is there using a lot of your stuff, teaching.
He's not. Oh, sweet!
Yeah, and
did you tell him he needs to get Liberty First University?
Absolutely, he came. He bought a lot of the DVDs and stuff, but he bought your Roots of Liberty a long time ago. And for five years, he's been teaching this group on the Constitution. And he talked about, you know, all this stuff. He said, when I went to school, he said, I don't know if I was too interested in girls and fast cars or didn't pay attention or what. He said, but I never knew all this stuff. I didn't really understand all of these details and didn't really care. You know, he said, but now, man, it's so I see how important it is. And so I'm really trying to do my best in this late in life to pass on this information, mm-hmm. to try to do my part to ensure that a republic continues that will protect individual liberty. So really, really amazing. So, you know, it is important. And really, I didn't learn this stuff when I was in school.
I hated history. I probably didn't pay attention. I don't think tried to teach but I didn't.
I know some places here and there, like we run into people. You know, it depends on the individual school district and where you're at. Some people encountered some of this stuff. You know, and of course, my mom's generation, they taught Americanism versus communism and different things like that. They, you know, things are pro-communism now in the public schools. But, yeah, so this information is not out there. And I think doubly so what we're going to talk about today, we're going to deal with the issue of slavery relating to the founders.
Mm-hmm.
And this is definitely something that I think worse than being not taught is really distorted and transformed and stuff that gets cherry-picked in order to create a particular narrative that basically says a couple of things. I think what you get from the propaganda today in regards to slavery and the foundation of this nation is, number one, that all of the founders were a bunch of slave-owning, white racists who created the Constitution in such a way as to intentionally support and extend and expand slavery. So, I mean, I've literally heard people say the Constitution was written for slavery, to make slaves. And then the second thing, I think, this is what bothers me a lot, is part of the narrative is that basically every black person before the Civil War was in chains.
Right.
Right?
Without Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
That there were no free black people in America.
And I think that's despicable.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you teach about Crispus Attucks, the first man to give his life for our independence was a black man. And many, many, many names like that before the Civil War of black men and women who were free and who were influential, who were pioneers, who were doing fantastic things.
That were fighting for our liberty. We had the Bucks of Liberty. We had George Middleton, who created the African Benevolent Society. Peter Salem.
I think it's a disgrace and an affront to their memory and their legacy, and particularly for the black community, to essentially erase them from history, because you can't teach them if you want everybody to think all that black people were slaves before the Civil War. They never did anything but exist in shackles.
Can
so
I mention,
that's a travesty.
Mention Wentworth Cheswell, who in 1774 was the son of an African slave, but a free man.
Right.
A free man who was considered New Hampshire's first archaeologist. He rode with Paul Revere and the first elected African American, and at that time American colonist, elected to public office. What about...
What was the name again?
His name is Wentworth Cheswell.
So that's... In this broadcast, we're gonna just mention a lot of these names that you don't know, that you can go research, you can go find. And
you
people
found
that deserve the honor. And we want to demonstrate to you really the counter, those two narratives.
Right.
That, no, all black people were not in chains before the Emancipation Proclamation.
And
many, many, many African Americans contributed and helped found this nation and fought for our liberty and did great things and deserve great honor.
And not all founders were pro-slavery.
Correct.
One of the amazing ones that you actually introduced me to, her name's Eleanor Eldridge.
Uh-huh.
I was just so impressed. I actually went online, read some of her biography.
Yeah.
She was amazing. She was born in 1746 in Rhode Island, right?
Free.
As a free woman.
Yeah, she was born free.
She was born free in 1746, right? She was a business owner.
Mm-hmm.
She ran multiple businesses all at the same time.
Yeah.
And she ended up accumulating an estate worth $4,800. Now, in the mid-1700s, are you stinking kidding me? $4,800 is a lot of money. And we have a free black woman business owner, successful business owner. Now, here's the thing. You have to know that her customers were not all black people.
Right.
In all those businesses, you have to know. So, but that means that the people in that society of all races, colors, and creeds respected her business. Yeah. And you know.
Yeah, in fact, part of her story, I think she got sick or something and yep. was out of town. And some guy tried to swindle her out of her property. Mm-hmm. And so it was actually a white lady who came to her defense, who tried to defend her mm-hmm. To get her property back or to keep her property. And, that's the other thing, that when you actually look at the history, it's not all the white people enslaving all the black people and mm-hmm. all the black people enslaved. There's so many instances of black and white working hand in hand, shoulder mm-hmm. to shoulder, in building a better nation. There were obviously racists. There were obviously people who were pro-slavery. There were obviously ignorant and evil mm-hmm. Men and horrible, horrible atrocities done under the color of slavery. And we know, of course, you know, slavery transitioned from indentured servitude that also included non-blacks. We know that it transitioned into more of an Afrocentric slavery, chattel slavery.
But it did not mean that, even though it was Afrocentric, that only black people were still slaves. At the time of the ratification of our Constitution, they were talking in the ratification debates how in Pennsylvania they actually had more white slaves than black slaves.
Right. But
at the time of the ratification
sure.
of the Constitution.
And all that's true. But again, I'm saying we understand that on the whole, mm-hmm. The black race, if you want to call it that race, use that term. I don't actually agree with those things. But, it was African slaves, right, generally at the center of it, took the brunt of it, suffered the most brutal, had the most brutal experience in slavery. But the point is, that's not all that black people were in America. And you had plenty of people fighting against it, who were against it. And in fact, what you actually discover in the history is that the majority were against it, but there were some other influences in influential states and wealthy people that try to perpetuate it.
Well,
but the point is, it's black and white working hand in hand to found this nation, and we do a disservice by concealing their history.
Well, and I think that this is a very complex issue, and to try to make it into this the simplistic way that it is formed in argument in America today in our school books just simply does the whole thing a disservice. Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal. Chris Ann Hall here with my husband and co-host JC Hall. This is part 3 of our special back to school series, The Inoculation to the Indoctrination. We're hoping that you are gathering your students, whether they be kindergarten, high school, college students, around and sharing this and truth so that they can be prepared to deal with and critically think about the stuff that they are being bombarded with through these textbooks. And one of the greatest, you see, you mentioned this before in the last break, or in the last segment, that, you know, declaring that America was formed on slavery, well, let me put it this way, that the only contribution that black people had in America was through slavery, was despicable. And it's not just simply because it's an attack on the founders, but it's an attack on the peoples whose memories
right.
are being denied.
Yeah, that to me is racist.
That is racist. And that's a willful agenda.
You're discrediting all of these great black Americans who contributed mm-hmm. to this nation. And you are deleting their history. These people who carry this message are deleting their history in order to carry forth a narrative that they don't fit within.
Right.
That's disgraceful. And so we mentioned Crispus Attucks, first man to give his life for our independence, was a black man.
Well,
at the
not
Boston
only
Massacre.
That, he had the highest attended funeral in Boston that they had ever seen.
Yeah, 10,000.
10,000.
Said that to somebody, a girl the other day. She said, oh, that's more than Michael Jackson's funeral. So
right?
He had a bigger funeral than Michael Jackson.
But think about that. If you're living in a society that we are taught is full of racists.
Why would 10,000 racists showed up to his funeral?
To honor Crispus Attucks? They were written poems about the man.
Right.
You know,
so
right?
That doesn't fit the narrative.
It does not fit the narrative.
And then you mentioned Wentworth, mm-hmm. Cheswell.
Cheswell, right? Wentworth, yeah.
Was that the one he rode with
Paul Revere.
Revere on Paul Revere's ride, right? So that's another thing. It's always Paul Revere's ride. I think there mm-hmm. were something like six riders at least or something like that.
Yeah, there were
many more riders.
There were two separate paths. So we had riders going in both directions.
So another son of an African slave.
But a born free.
Right. Also, we mentioned Eleanor Eldridge, mm-hmm. right? Not only black, but a female.
Right.
So successful business owner, respected business owner, wealthy. Mm-hmm. I think it was in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. Was it?
Phyllis Wheatley, who was actually brought to America in slavery as a child from Senegal, West Africa. But her the family that she was given to or that bought her, I don't know how it worked, actually raised her as one of her own children. She actually became, they taught her to read and write. She became an accomplished, published poet.
Yeah, famous.
Famous poet. Who wrote a very famous poem about George Washington.
Yeah. I think many people know Phyllis Wheatley, but I don't know that
Eleanor
she's spoken
Eldridge.
Of in the Liberty context when
right.
you read some of the stuff she
right.
wrote. So another one I have, black female, Fanny Jackson Coppin. This is interesting because, again, the whole Emancipation Proclamation, that's
when
she came
free. She
doesn't look
like she came from the 1700s.
No, so this is a little later, but she enrolled in Oberlin College in 1860, okay? Mm-hmm. That's before the Civil War, right? Mm-hmm. So this is a black female, she's enrolling in the college, Oberlin College. She actually ended up teaching there. She taught Greek, Latin, taught mm-hmm. mathematics. She ended up being the first black school principal in what is now Cheney University in 1865. All of that is before the Civil War.
Yeah, well, you also have James Fortin, who is part of our revolutionary history, the foundation of America, another black man born free. His parents were free. They were his parents were children of slaves. He was born free, and at 14 years old, joined the American Navy, and was taken captive by a British naval officer, and was given a deal: I'll let you come and live with me in Great Britain. You will have more prosperity, more comfort than you'll ever know. The only thing is you will have to be a servant to my son.
Yep.
And James Fortin, this 14-year-old young man, said, I will never be a traitor to the interests of this liberty. And he refused. He's like, I would rather be poor than be a rich slave. A poor freeman than be a rich slave.
There again, men tear up our constitution, and from every direction we cry revolution. Standing together and without permission, soldiers for truth in the war of attrition, the love of our country as our.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Oh, but I'm only a stranger here. I'm a long, long way from my home. And I'm going to change all the things I find strange. For I am not one.
Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal. Daily, Monday through Thursday, every day, giving you the daily dose of Constitution and principle. And now we are doing our back-to-school special, the inoculation from indoctrination. And we're talking today about slavery and the foundation of America.
I want to add one thing. I don't know that you mentioned this. You mentioned Wentworth Cheswell, who rode with Paul Revere in 1774. He was also the first African American elected to public office.
Yeah, we
in
mentioned
America.
That.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that was, did you, I don't remember if you said the date.
No, I didn't say
that
the
date. That was 1768.
1768.
So that's a pretty good while before that the Emancipation Proclamation.
100
that
years.
That was actually before the Declaration of Independence.
It was.
1768. First,
it was.
First African-American elected to public office.
Well, we had a provision among the states that said if you're going to fight for liberty and you're a slave, you are now a free person forever.
Right.
How many people gave their only free breath because they believed in the path to liberty?
Yeah.
And now we have to deal with this. We have to deal daily with this sickening attack that America was founded by rich white guys who wanted to, wanted to consolidate power to themselves so they could impress other people.
Yeah, America's founded kind of like what our former attorney general Eric Holder, when he pretty much said America's essentially racist. It was founded on racism, and a lot of people are brainwashed with that mentality, and it stirs up division mm-hmm. and hate. I mean, we probably live in the most polarized time in American history now.
Well, since the battle for independence.
I think so. I don't think we've definitely not seen anything like this in our lifetime. I don't think it has been this polarized in American history. I really don't think mm-hmm. it has. I would say despite the violence and different things we saw in what we call the civil rights movement, it's a different sort of form now, but
well, because
it
it's ubiquitous
so
and it's everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
It's everywhere.
And it's
maybe it's because the media is so in your face all the time, you see it more. Maybe it isn't more, but it's just more.
Well, it seems more of a
published.
Dishonest kind of polarization, right? Mm-hmm. Because you can look at the civil rights movement or the time of the civil rights movement. It's sort of easy to divide. I mean, they're racist. They hated on the basis of race, and that's pretty obvious.
They created laws on the basis of race.
Yeah. Now you have this division built on lies, saying here's racism, there's racism, and we're found on racism, and this and that, and distorting the history making people that would not normally hate, mm-hmm. making them full of hate, full of anger, full of resentment, hating their own country, hating their neighbor. And I think a lot of the tool, the major tool that's used is this distortion of history.
Well, and I think also it's the, like we've said before, it's the fact that you can hide behind social media. I was called a racist the other day because I used a hashtag. Right? So, I mean, you have no accountability for your statements anymore through the social media. And you have generations of people who have been raised on ignorance instead of education. And so people don't realize that the majority of our founders were abolitionists.
Yeah, and I think we could do a show on every one individually. And,
right.
and we could spend the rest of the show going through a long list. And the same with, we were mentioning individual black Americans and females. You have a whole course on this, Liberty First University, called The Forgotten Founders,
yes.
where you talk about the women and the minorities that helped found this nation.
Yeah, I was wishing we could spend an episode on a women.
Yeah, we have, and we have the other DVD, The Slavery and the Founders, where we talk about this.
All at libertyfirstuniversity.com.
Yeah, and I think we need to do a follow-up on that because, I've researched this a lot.
I know,
and
this
continued
is your
to
thing.
Research it since we made that DVD, and I mean I have so much more. It's funny, on my Instagram account, I think I post more black history than the account that I follow that's
right.
called Black History.
Right.
And of course they don't post anything connected with any black American that lived obviously
before the
Civil Emancipation
War,
Proclamation.
Right.
So they don't even know. But you have people like George Washington. I've mentioned this before. I remember hearing, I think the guy was a pastor, and somewhere up north, maybe Chicago or Detroit, and he was saying how, you know, all of these, the founders, their names should be removed from everything.
Right.
And he was saying, why should
right.
George Washington be on anything? And he was a racist slave owner. That's a guy who knows nothing about George Washington's
right.
personal history.
Right.
George Washington inherited slaves when he was 11 years old.
Yeah, what does 11-year-old know about slavery other than what, you know, he's taught in
right.
society? And tell me exactly what kind of choice could an 11-year-old make?
Yeah, none.
To
but
do that.
So then he grows up, and this is the thing with all of them, and it's not to excuse their behavior.
No.
But you also distort history when you take them out of their own context and their
right.
own societal context. And so even George Washington, you see them grow, you know, he's growing up and he's in this, and he has all these entanglements, and there are these societal entanglements with slavery connected to their wealth and their position in society, and therefore their influence in government and what they were able to do that would in the future end up, you know, being what tore down slavery.
But the
point I want to make is, as he went along, the more he learned and the more he understood, the more abolitionist positions he adopted, to the point where then when George Washington died, he attempted to free all of his slaves in his will. Now, some of the other founders, even though they fought against slavery and they you know, made abolitionist statements, they did other things, there were several that did not free their slaves. And there are a couple of these guys that you look at, like Thomas Jefferson in particular, who some of it is an enigma. Like, why? I mean, we could sit and talk about the whys, but obviously he didn't live up to the ideals. Mm-hmm. George Mason is another guy they point to. Well, he had slaves and he didn't free slaves in his will like Washington did. But George Mason, think about George Mason and what he did, what he fought for the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. He eventually mm-hmm. didn't even sign the Constitution before they had the Bill of Rights because mm-hmm. he said it didn't do enough to protect, right? He essentially is the author of the Virginia Bill of Rights, the Virginia Resolutions, which was the model, which ended up being the model for our Bill of Rights as they, you know, brought forward the principles from their English legal history and looked at this example that George Mason was instrumental in Virginia in the creating. So you look at all that, and then of course he talked about the poison, the daily poison of slavery and how it should be ended. And in fact, one of the reasons George Mason stated in his objections to signing the Constitution was the fact that the Constitution didn't end slavery immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, the Constitution basically provided for a sunset, right? We're gonna ban slavery in 20 years. In 20 years, this no longer exists. So there was a sunset clause.
It was the importation of slaves.
The importation
yeah.
of slaves. So there was a sunset clause about slavery. And by the way, if you're going to say that, well, the Constitution was written to continue slavery, then how do you have a clause in it that ends the importation of slaves that contradicts that notion? If they wanted to continue, then they wouldn't include that. But anyway, that's one of the reasons George Mason specifically gave, I'm not signing this because of this. And some of the founders came back later. Madison, I think, was one. He said, one of the things I regret was that we didn't go ahead and, you know, pull off the Band-Aid right then, that we didn't end slavery immediately rather than the 20-year sunset. So a lot of these guys regretted it, which was in line with their abolitionist feelings. But I think we talk about a lot of those guys, but I think one of the shining lights to me from the founders is John Jay.
Now, before you get into Jay, I just want to make it a reference here. If you want to know the discussion that happened as to why the slavery was not ended immediately, because there was some very, very serious reasons and political and social and economical that drove them to make the decision, even though they regretted
fight.
It, they had to do what they did at that time. You need to get the DVD, Slavery and the American Founders, that teaches why this decision had to be made.
They felt like they had to. I mean, that was
well,
their
they felt like they
had to
make that. Like, there was no other choice. And I'm telling you,
right.
it really, really is a strong and relevant
and
argument.
And their decisions were not because we want slavery to continue,
right.
because we favor slavery.
And it is so easy to be armchair quarterbacks in hindsight. You know, when but you don't live it, you don't realize it, and you don't realize the dangers that they were facing during this whole period. So well, go get the Slavery and the American Founders DVD, or better yet, enroll in LFU and at libertyfirstuniversity.com and get the whole story.
This is the thing to me. It's not that you look at that history and you excuse their behavior by giving all these justifications of why they, you know, why they made their decisions. The point is to look at the fact of this is why they thought they had to make these decisions, and then and to say that without looking at that, like you're saying, and say that, well, they were just racist and they thought, you know, black people were less than human and they were property and they wanted to continue slavery is a distortion. It's dishonest. That is not the content of the discussion. That is not their reasoning. It is exactly as you say, there were many influences that they thought we have to do it this way, and this is the best way to do it.
And the courses at LFU will not only just give you, you know, I mean, like, this is just the majority of us explaining to you. I think you need to hear the quotes from the founders themselves.
Yeah, we've tried.
You have to hear your words.
We try to run through. I mean, I've tried to run through a litany very quickly. We gave you several founders as an example. But
I think you need to hear their own words.
Absolutely.
Like
you have
George
to study
Mason
them
said, slavery is that slow poison which is daily contaminating the minds and morals of our people. And you know, at Washington, let me just mention before you get into, because I know you want to get into John Jay, but Washington said, there is not a man living who wishes more sincerely than I do to see a plan adopted for the abolition of slavery. Mm-hmm. I never mean to possess another slave by purchase, it being among my first wishes to see some plan adopted by which the slavery in this country may be abolished. This is 1786.
Right.
So, and even during the ratification debates, they said, the majority of the delegates want to see the end of slavery.
Yeah. No, they have a, there's a sort of blistering discussion about those handful of slave-owning states that really were hijacking
there
things.
There were really
twisting
only two.
People. Yeah, two that were kind of really gumming up. Mm-hmm.
Georgia and South Carolina.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal. And this is the last segment of our part three, inoculation to indoctrination. And, you know, really, we had so many ideas of everything that we were going to do in this show today, but it just goes so quickly. And I think it's just more proof that you can't deal with this complex issue in 30 minutes. It can't be done.
Yeah.
And so you got to go to a Liberty First University and get the full education because your children need to know the truth.
Yeah. I think, as I mentioned, John Jay is definitely one that people ought to know.
You could do a whole show on him.
Yeah, we could do a whole show on John Jay. He was governor of New York. And in New York, he founded the New York Manumission Society in 1785.
What does manumission mean?
Basically, it's a word for emancipation.
Uh-huh.
That was in 1785, along with Alexander Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
Alexander Hamilton immediately joined with him at the founding. And John Jay also helped enact the 1799 law. Again, oh, this is before Emancipation Proclamation.
Right,
1799 law in New York for the gradual emancipation of all slaves.
You know, most people don't realize that Jefferson wrote the first Declaration of Independence with emancipation clauses.
The preamble was pointedly abolitionist in its wording. There's a letter in 1786 where that somebody gives a donation to John Jay for his manumission society. And by the way, I forget the long title exactly. I should have had this in front of me. But the long sort of title of the group, the Manumission Society, or the Society for the Manumission of Slaves, mm-hmm. and something about helping to fight against slavery and then help those who have been freed or still need to be freed. So they would defend slaves. So people would try to capture slaves and or capture free blacks and drag them back into slavery, you know, accuse them of being slaves.
And he was defending them.
And he, yeah, they had a lawyer. He was a lawyer. And
can I mention something really quick?
They defended him in court, yeah.
It was actually the Federal Fugitive Slave Act during the Civil War that was still doing that. So the federal government, who was supposed to be waging war over the southern states to free slaves, at the same time was enforcing the Federal Fugitive Slave Act.
While states were nullifying the
Federal Fugitive Slave Act, they were enforcing it.
I think it was Wisconsin or I don't know if Wisconsin existed. There's one of the states sort of in the far north that was saying, no, we're not going to follow this federal law.
Yeah, it was Minnesota, I think. I don't remember, but I could be wrong. But anyway, the whole point is, how do you have any credibility in the assertion that the Civil War was to end slavery when at the same time you're killing people and enforcing slavery?
Yeah, that's another complicated topic.
Right. But
so
still.
Jay gets this, gets a donation, and he writes a thank you letter back to the guy. I want to read some of this. He said, he's basically talking about why they formed the society, and he said it certainly is formed on the purest and most disinterested principles of benevolence and goodwill towards men, and they have already in more than one instance been the means of rescuing oppressed individuals from the hands of those who cruelly make merchandise of men. Let the charitable consider that they can seldom practice that virtue with more benefit to others or more consolation to themselves than promoting lawful and honest measures for preserving poor, unoffending citizens in the enjoyment of their freedom and families, and preventing husbands and wives, parents and children from being torn from each other and carried to the market in different and distant places. What acts of public or private justice and philanthropy can occasion more pleasing emotions in the breast of Christians, or be more agreeable to him who shed his blood for the redemption of men, that such as tend to restore the oppressed to their natural rights? That's John Jay, mm-hmm. one of the writers of the Federalist Papers. I think the first Supreme Court justice. So no, our founders were not all racist. They were not all pro-slavery. Learn your history.
And God bless. We will see you again tomorrow.
In sharing the blessings I received, let me know.